Hello, this is Tom Waller from Lululemon. I am the Chief Science Officer, Senior Vice President of Advanced Innovation here at the company. And it gives me great pleasure to answer some questions for you today. What I am most proud of in 2019 was after 7 years of building a team within a company, I finally have been able to create a structure that I believe is long-term, the most sustainable way for innovation to work at a company like Lululemon. I'm really proud of a leadership team that spans now multiple horizons of the work that we do, from extending the business that we're already in, bringing some quite cutting-edge, we consider quite cutting-edge R&D principles to the creation of products and services near to the business, all the way out to exploring a future where, you know, our brand can be considered across a number of different businesses that it will be in, you know, quite different to where we are now as an apparel retailer. So for me, the most exciting thing is the sort of the dry powder that we've created in order to build a really long-term and sustainable future for Lululemon. Couple of key challenges that I've overcome, or we've overcome in 2019, were a lot of them associated with upstream projects that have a tremendous amount of value in terms of meeting human needs. I mean, that's primarily where we start. Yet, we didn't know exactly how to transition them into the business. One, for example, we've developed a means of helping someone to navigate their bra purchasing experience in a store by way of pulling uniquely from them their movement profile, which we in turn relate to a certain product choice that we believe will be much more delightful should you follow the guidance that we provide, and you help us with answering questions of our desire to understand a little bit more about how we can help you better. And knowing that to be true, you know, there's a technical challenge of taking what started in a laboratory environment and making that scalable into certainly a physical store environment. We thought that would be the main challenge to face, yet it really wasn't just about the technical challenge. We had to consider a retail environment where, you know, it's extremely competitive, that profitability per square foot of real estate that we take up is not something that the business can compromise. So we have to make sure that, you know, we're minimizing the impact that we have, or conversely to that, maximizing the impact that we can have so that it becomes a better choice of what we put in stores. So that final 6 inches of technical transition and user experience design has been a really interesting challenge. You know, we've had to consider not just people's minds in terms of the logic or the insight that we've had that makes this work, but more importantly, winning the hearts of the consumer and the wallets of, you know, both the company and ultimately the consumer, our guests, so that it makes sense to all parties. So that's been a really interesting challenge. Second to that would be projects that haven't quite made it yet and figuring out how to pace them. We've been working for a long time to reimagine, reinvent. I know that sounds cliche, but meditation. Meditation, we've done a ton of research on. We know that it's a secret weapon for how people can achieve true whole human performance, and yet not everyone does it. And it's so easy to do, so we've been questioning why. And we've invented a couple of different programs of work, products that people interact with. And I'd say one of the key decisions that we made that I'm now, you know, looking back on and wondering if it was the right one, was we built a virtual reality platform that would allow a different way for people to experience meditation. And I don't think that was necessarily the best platform choice for this time. I think that it is a extremely exciting platform technology to be working with, but in hindsight, I would probably have looked at more of a withering technology approach. You know, what could we do in the simplest possible way and more of a minimum viable product rather than something quite so cutting edge in terms of technology? So I think those would be the two that this year we've really looked at, and both technical by nature, a lot of them in terms of timing and readiness and uncertainty being things that we manage, and we've learned a lot. The way that we believe that we're doing things differently, it would be hard to argue whether that was different, better, or just different, is quite key to who we are. I mean, we founded a team at Lululemon that we did not want to call innovation. And there's a reason for that. You know, partially was that everyone at the company, we believe, should own or be responsible for innovation. And so having one team with that in its title seemed, and if we didn't qualify it as different, seemed dangerous. It seemed dangerous for a couple of reasons. One, we didn't want one team to be doing it and everyone else give up on it. Nor did we want one team to be seemingly having the right, and then that be questioned by the rest of the business. So we called ourselves White Space, quite literally, because we could see a lot of white spaces within the elasticity of our brand. And we had a way of getting into those white spaces in order that we could build new businesses, new offerings for our guest, our consumer. That was somewhat foundational, what we decided to do a little differently. That's unique, I believe, to the company that we are, which is directly related to the culture that we have. It's a culture that tolerates ambiguity in quite a high degree. And without that, we can't operate the way that we operate. We can't be part of the innovation machine. And I understand why a lot of companies require that there is a separate team that is the innovation machine. But I genuinely believe that that's not the right long-term sustainable approach. Similarly, we have a philosophy that projects own people. People do not own projects. And what we mean by that is that we are designed to be in a co-creative mode, in that we cannot be working on a project that does not have partnership across the business. We refuse to believe that what we do is a relay race. We operate in a way much more like a team sport, where there is positional excellence, and our positional specialty, if you like, is an R&D bias. But that R&D bias is incomplete, and it requires the rest of the team to be present at that time. And we practice, you know, fixed plays to make sure that we can be predictable about an outcome. But ultimately, it doesn't matter who scores the goal, to carry on the analogy. That again is something that we do uniquely differently, or certainly compared to what I've seen a lot elsewhere. And again, then within, if I sort of click down on that a little bit more, within our model of being R&D bias, we've heavily focused on, you know, opening sort of the wrapper of human-centered designers' approach, and really thinking about what lies beneath. So if human-centered is somewhat a study of the behavior, that's what we see at the end, but we're going really underneath that and looking at the mechanical, emotional, cognitive attributes of a human from a study of the, you know, the neuroscience, the biomechanics, the physiology, like everything, every discipline that we need to acquire. We look at that in, on, and around the body, in that we can truly understand the human in an extremely powerful way. The beauty of doing that means that we can enter into any category, any business, because they all have the human at the center. And so we're unconstrained by any particular technological approach. And we believe that that's unique, and so far it's proving extremely valuable. An important trend for corporate innovation in general in the next couple of years, I'd say some are a little more obvious and would come with a finally sentimentality, which is recognizing that sustainability is the greatest approach in order to achieve the highest degree of innovation change or innovative change, depending on how you'd like to look at it. And that comes at a technical as well as organizational stance. I mean, I would say that anyone that is not putting sustainability at the tip of the spear of their innovation efforts is missing a trick. And that trend, now it has some momentum. It's not just about you doing the right thing. It's about that vehicle being actually the place where the best things can happen. And that's, you know, all of the bottom lines for business, for the consumer, and for the planet. And similarly, I think there's another interesting set of signals in terms of the future being here, and something that we should really start to take notice of, which is people's association or disassociation with their own busyness in their lives. And busyness has become an interestingly and somewhat skewed valuable currency. And if we take in the other hand, this rise in anxiety and depression and loneliness that we associate so often with social media, I would say that there's not any one particular platform that is to blame. I think that really society taking this overvaluing of the currency of busyness is much more important. And then thinking about what we can all do to offset that, you know, adding new currencies so that we can achieve and support people in achieving balance in the world, but also recognizing where those recoveries happen. You know, stress is not something we can avoid. In fact, we all need it. We adapt to stress. It makes us stronger and more resilient. But ultimately, too much of it leads to injury, which is fairly established in the physical world, and in the emotional mental world, it's a little further behind and a very rich area for us to work on. A final message I would have for my peers all around the world would really be a call to action. I've spent the last 12 months or so reflecting on the interactions that I have with other leaders of innovation around the world, and various conferences and summits that exist on the topic. And one of the key reflections for me has been recognizing how many people, how many companies are putting innovation at the forefront, and yet then stepping back and noticing that there's not quite so many innovative changes taking place relative to the effort that I see going in. And of course, part of that is a function of the failures that we all expect to see as we strive towards the cutting edge. But similarly, and this is where the call to action comes in, I was reflect on how much time you spend talking about what it is to be and do innovation, and then correlate that to how much breakthrough you are actually achieving. How many failures have you actually moved past? Like, what is the delivery model that you are focusing on in order that innovation doesn't become a topic of discussion or an intellectual holiday? It actually has to deliver results to the company. And if you have not delivered results to your company in a meaningful way in the last 12 months, consider that there is another way to operate. Consider that there is another structure to create. Consider that you have a responsibility to deploy the resources of the company in the most powerful way. And I wish you luck, and please keep in touch.